Welcome to Al Berman Live from a studio apartment in North Hollywood, California. This is episode 68. Episode 68. It's been about a month. I think it's been a month since I've done a podcast. Because if you follow my podcast, you know that I had surgery. I had hip surgery. I had my second hip surgery. I have officially run out of hips to surgically be surgically on. I guess they last about 20 years. So if, you know, if I last another 20 years or so, I may have to go back in. I'm saying if I last, not the hips. If I am still here in 20 years or so, I may have to go back in, depending on how much I use the hips. And I plan to use them. I'm going to use you, Joe Buck. What movie is that from? Midnight Cowboy. Okay, showing my age. Okay, first of all, hello? Hello to everybody, or anybody who's listening to this. I'm going to get into my whole, I'm going to try to cover everything in this podcast that happened in the hospital and up till now. And I think I'll be able to do it. I think I've looked, I took a lot of notes, but most of the notes are things that are not things I want to talk about. Okay, first of all, let me just get this out of the way. It's a beautiful day in Los Angeles. It's about 77 degrees here in North Hollywood, California. That's right. And here I am. By the way, the building is changing. My upstairs neighbor, I've talked about him, my directly upstairs neighbor, is moving at the end of the month, which could cause some drama because, you know, if you know me or know about my podcast, I do smoke cigars in my house, and this has bothered many neighbors. And what I found out legally, I am within my right to smoke cigars in my house. I'm living in a rent-stabilized building. Now, if you move into the building now, the landlords have the right to tell you not to smoke. You know, I think what they're trying to do is push the old people out that do smoke and get new people in. And then thus you can have a non-smoking building, which is fine. Eventually I am going to move. But I just anticipate that there's going to be some possible drama, possible kind of weird manipulation. I don't know. Maybe I think it's all going to work out. Maybe this is a sign, A, for me to quit cigars. B, to maybe I'll be moving to a better place. Or C, I'm going to keep smoking cigars and stay here. And they're going to figure out a way to... I'm looking at somebody up there who likes to have cigar smoke come into their room sometimes. But as the way the law is stated, as of January 2012, if you're in a rent-stabilized apartment like I have, people who have been here since before that, you cannot legally ask them or tell them to stop smoking. And you know what? And over the years, I've been more than, you know, sensitive to people and secondhand smoke and this and that, more so than they are to allowing me to do what I want to do. You know, it's all about, it seems to all be about all about the other people all the time. Like, oh, well, you know, smoke bothers me. Well, I understand that. And, but on the other hand, this is something I enjoy doing, and I'm allowed to, and I legally am allowed to do it. And you know, the whole thing about secondhand smoke, I don't want smoke being blown in my face either. But you know, like there's one neighbor that lives way up in the corner on the second floor, and they were complaining to somebody else about my cigar smoke. I mean, how are they even smelling it? I mean, the managers in my building don't even smell it, and they're like they're on the first floor. Well, whatever, anyway. So that's something that we'll be covering as time goes on. We'll see. I have a feeling, excuse me, woke up with a little thing in my throat today, a little allergy thing. I'm anticipating they may come to me and say, hey, we're gonna fix this place up. We don't want you to ruin it with your cigar smoke. And I'm going to say, well, then you better figure out a way to stop that without having me stop smoking. Because I am not going to stop smoking my cigars because you tell me to. Like I said, I want to have the freedom. Maybe I'll cut down. Maybe I won't. Maybe I'll just double my cigar smoking. All right, enough of that. Enough of the cigar smoke. Enough of that. Okay. Let's get into... I've got a brand new left hip. I had a right hip, new right hip put in September, and a brand new left hip towards the end of April. And it turned out the left hip was worse than the right hip. And I knew it because it was really painful. It must have just gotten worse and worse as time went on. So leading up to going into the hospital, I was getting, you know, phone calls from friends. And one of my friends called me up and he said, hey, he left me a message and he said, hey, knock him dead in there. Knock him dead in the hospital. And I was thinking, you know what? I don't know if that's like an appropriate phrase to say to somebody going in for surgery. Knock him dead. Like, I'm going to knock him. How am I going to knock him? What am I going to do? I'm just going to be laying there while they freaking do surgery. I mean, it's a kind of a passive act on my part. You know, you just don't want to hear the word dead when you're going in the hospital. Hey, knock dead. Knock him dead. So, anyway, I know he was being, you know, supportive and nice, but I was just thinking that's kind of a, you know, whatever. It's just a kind of a phrase I didn't really want to hear. And then like a day or two before that, I was at Whole Foods, and there's this Asian lady that hangs out, that sits in front of this Whole Foods. She has a husband who's Caucasian. I'm only saying that to just give you a visual. He's like a middle-aged Caucasian man. She's a middle-aged Asian woman. I don't know of what nationality. I don't know. I don't think she's Filipino. I don't know. I really don't know. Filipinos, I can tell. Other Asians, sometimes it's hard. So, for me. So, she sits in front, and when she sees me come, because I have a temporary handicap placard, and I park right in front. Her husband is there every day because he does neck massages in front of the place. You can pay him money, and he's got this little chair, and you get a neck massage. Which I find odd. It's an oddly... I don't know if I guess I could do it. I guess I could just have a neck... If I really wanted a neck massage, I guess I could do it out in the open, in the front, in the parking lot, with people walking by with bags of groceries. I don't know, whatever. But she very often helps me. I'll pull up, and she smiles at me, and she'll go get me a cart. Or when I come back, she'll tell me to leave the cart. You know, we wave, smile, hello. We don't really have much of a conversation. But I ran into her like a day or two prior to my going into the hospital. I went for my last supermarket run, my last Whole Foods supermarket run. And by the way, Whole Foods has become my half go-to market, I realize. Anyway, so I saw her in the store itself. She was about to use the restroom, or she just finished using the restroom. And so I figured I would tell her, hey, I'm not going to see you for a while, because I am going into the hospital to get this other hip replaced. And that's when I learned that English is really her second language. She smiled and she said something, but I don't think she comprehended what I said. But she's a sweet lady. Sweet lady. And I just wanted to mention that because I thought there might be something funny there. And I might have not been right about that. So the night before the surgery, well, for the whole day of the surgery, it was like a really long day because, first of all, like, I stopped smoking cigars. I didn't smoke a cigar. As tradition dictates from last time, I didn't have a cigar that day. And I didn't have any cigars until I came home a couple days later. See, we're back to the cigars again. Okay. I think I'm a little bit addicted to cigars. Okay. So, the whole day, you know, you're just waiting around and you don't want to eat too much. And I had to stop eating and drinking any water after midnight. And last time I kind of, you know, stayed up the whole, I just laid down and kind of stayed up the whole night. And again, I did the same thing. I never fell asleep. You don't really have much to do. I didn't have much to do. I just kept, obsessively checking my pre-surgical instructions, because they give you a bunch of things. Don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that, that, don't do this, do this, do that, do that, da-da-da. So, okay. And they give me this, they want you to shower twice with this soap. They call it, I don't know what kind of soap it's called. I guess it's the soap, maybe it's the soap that the doctors use to wash up, you know, wash their hands. It's for surgeries, and it's supposed to prevent infections. And so they wanted me to do it twice, once before when I went to bed, before I went to bed, and once when I got up. So I did that. And but I was mentioning, I guess it was to Deb, my friend Deb, who was my friend and advocate. She was my advocate again. I said, you know, you don't get much lather with this soap. I noticed that last time. It's not a very lathering soap. And she told me that what causes lather in regular soap is a chemical called sodium lauryl sulfate. And it is purely a psychological thing. Like, it doesn't do anything, which I find hard to believe. Because when I'm using my lever, whatever soap that is I use, and I'm, you know, washing myself, and it's like, it just seems, maybe it is psychological, but it just seems like there's more soap going on me. Because I put the other one, it's just like, I don't know. But I did the best I could, and Deb picked me up, I guess it was about 5:30 a.m. Again, I was scheduled to be the first one in surgery, and so she picked me up in front of my building and whisked me off to the hospital, where we checked in. And we proceeded to wait. We waited a longer time this time. And we met a very nice young girl, an Iranian Jewish girl. I think she might have been born here. Maybe she was born in Iran. I'm not sure. She was only about 18. Very sweet girl. She was very drawn to me and Deb. We were talking about different things. She was there with her father. Her father was in a wheelchair. He was having some kind of surgery. And he was a very, 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 very religious Jewish person, extremely religious, looking at his prayer book and praying and praying and praying, and never once looking at me or Deb, and never once saying anything. I mean, hardly ever talked to his daughter, who seemed to be saddling all the burden of being there for her family. I guess they have other members of her family, but they weren't there yet. And you know, it's funny about these religious people, a guy like that, you know, never once looking your way, just so into his religion, so into this, so into doing his prayers, because it's so important to do that, you know, and not relate to your fellow human beings. Is it any wonder I was a Christian for 2 years? That's another story. That's when I first got sober. I'm not going to get into it. I might have already talked about that at one time. But anyway, so we sat there, and it was, you know, she was very drawn to us, but she was very, 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 very much into her religion. And she, my therapist also came by later. I met her later on. She came to the recovery room later on, but she also hung out with Deb and this girl. And she reminded me that that we were talking, she was talking about people who have were born Jewish and then were not religious, but then end up becoming religious. Like, it was like a friend of mine, another comedian I know is, has become religious. She calls him, they're back on the path, which is great, okay? Personally, I went through 5 years of Orthodox Hebrew school, and I love the Jewish, I love Judaism, got nothing but love for it, love the culture, the food, but just cannot relate to the other things. So I guess I'm not on the path. I guess I'm off the path. Sorry! All right, so I go into the pre-op place, my doctor comes in, talks to me, he asks me how business is. How's business? I mean, I said, I haven't been able to do any work for months. What are you talking about? Let's fix this thing up. And then they bring me into the operating room, and then they shoot me with some anesthesia, and the next thing I know, I'm in the recovery room, and Deb is there, and then my therapist is there, Glenna Lee, my therapist, and then finally, when the nurses feel I've been sufficiently, I guess, come out of the anesthesia, and I can move my feet and stuff like that, they wheel me into the orthopedic ward, where I get my own room again, And I meet my nurse. Forget my first nurse was, I think, a woman named Ala. I think it was Ala. Yeah, a woman named Ala. I guess if I was a Muslim, I'd be feeling, I don't know if I'd be feeling happy about that. I don't know if they, you know, because a woman named Ala? But she, I don't know, she was from, I think, Ukraine. Very nice. I had really good nurses. Four very personable nurses. The only thing is they're you know, they're all following the same instructions, and they all are instructed to keep you drugged up. And, you know, whether you have pain or not. And I have had very little pain. But they kept me on low dosages of painkillers. And then they have these nurse's aides. They call them clinical partners in this hospital. And there was one character, a guy named Maxie. Maxie was very feminine, kind of Asian guy. I think Filipino. Maxie. And he would just walk in and he had this, he had certain catchphrases. Like he would always say, you know, call me, call my name and I'll be there. And he goes, hello, everything's simply marvelous, simply marvelous. And, I think it was starting to drive me a little crazy after a while. I didn't quite understand. Because he said it all the time. Every time he would come in, he would say, call my name and I'll be there. I'm simply marvelous. You know, talk about a captive audience. But, you know, he was okay. And then there was this, the fourth nurse I had. I had four nurses each, because I was there two whole days, each doing 12-hour shifts. I had this young Filipina cutie pie that was so nice, so sweet. You know, oh, then I tried to send word to this one nurse I had met the last time there. I don't know if I talked about it, but I met her. She didn't really work with me, but I met her in the hallway, and she, anyway, you know, we connected, and she wasn't working on my department, my, you know, thing, but I sent word from several people that she should come at least say hello to me, and she didn't, and I was greatly disappointed. I mean, you know, couldn't she have just come over and said hello, but whatever, maybe she was afraid I was going to say something out of the way. So, yeah, whatever. All right, I know I'm rambling on. Okay. So they ply you with drugs for 2 days, and then they send you home with lots of instructions on what you should and shouldn't do. Don't bend this way. Don't go that way. Don't do this way. But you do that. Be careful of infection. If you have an infection, it can be. And I was just like, all right, I've already been through this. You know, last time I was really freaked out, but I got through it. This time, I was much less freaked out. And this time, I also had access to better home physical therapy. I actually got a physical therapist and an occupational therapist to come to my house. And I had this physical therapist, and she was pretty good. She gave me some good exercises, you know, that I'm doing every day. And I'm finished with her. I'm about to do some outside physical therapy. Boy, this stuff is hysterical, isn't it? I'm just catching you up on this stuff. But at one point, what I did is I put both of these therapist numbers in my phone so that I would have it when I needed to call them or text them. And then when they called me, I would be able to identify them. And so I told the physical therapist, yeah, I'm putting your number in my phone. And she got all kind of like, oh, don't call me a lot. You know, don't call me a lot, okay? Because, you know, I said, listen, I'm not going to call you at all. Except maybe to confirm an appointment or change an appointment. I have no intention of calling you. Don't worry about it. So so she leaves. She leaves, you know, we have our first appointment. She leaves. And that afternoon, I get a call from her. She wants to know if she left a piece of paper behind. And I say, I don't see the piece of paper anywhere around here. And she goes, well, it could be, you know, I think it might have left on your counter or on your bed. Or this. I said, I don't see it. And that's that. I don't see it. I don't know what you're talking about. Then the very next day, she calls me again. And mind you, this is the woman that told me that I should not call her a lot. She calls me again. She goes, you know, can I come over to look to see if that piece of paper's there? Because if it's not there, I've got to give you another one. It's something that I signed. I said, okay, you can come over. And so she comes over, And it turns out we kept this folder here with papers. I didn't look in there. That's where the paper was. And she found it, and she was like, okay, I found it. And I said, okay. I said, by the way, we hadn't made the second appointment yet. And so this was a Tuesday. And she said, well, we'll get together on Friday. I go, what time? She goes, you know what? I don't know just yet. Let me call you. I go, fine. So Thursday comes and goes, and I don't hear from her. And I figure, well, you know what? I'll just call her the next day. Maybe she's just going to come in the afternoon. And I slept late that day, and I had all my phones, all the phones off, turned off. And, well, lo and behold, she showed up at my front gate and called my landline, which is connected to my landline. And she was like, hi, this is Susan. I'm here. And she waited for 15 minutes, and then she left. Well, I actually woke up a short time later. And when I discovered she had come to my door, I called her and I said, hey, listen, we did not have an appointment. She goes, well, no, we did. I go, no. You know, you came over and I asked you if, you know, what time was the appointment. And you said to me that you were going to call me because you weren't sure. And she goes, well, I don't know why I would say that because I don't like calling people. I said, well, you could have fooled me. I'm getting lots of phone calls from you. But, I mean, the point is that had you made this appointment with me, I would have kept it. And she says, well, you know, you remember you told me that, you know, you like to get up, you like to have your appointments later in the morning or early afternoon. And around, you know, she said something about 11. I go, well, we never made an appointment for 11. But I said, but you know what? Let's just forget about it. It was a miscommunication. And I'm not going to, like, fight you to the death on this, but, you know, what the hell? So you know, but our next few appointments went smoothly. You know, we had appointments. She came. We worked. She left. And she did help me out quite a bit. I got to give her props on that. The other lady, occupational therapist, she's here to kind of make sure that I can do things independently, and I'm doing really well. And
she's got kind of an annoying voice. Hi, this is Cheryl. This is Cheryl. Hello, Al.
Excuse me. Making me cough.
Hello, Al. This is Cheryl.
I'm losing my train of thought here. She has this habit, like, okay, I've got her on my phone. So she calls me up, and she's kind of so slow in talking. So, like, she called me one day, right? And my phone lights up. It goes, Cheryl, OT. And I pick up. I go, hello. There's nobody there. Hello. And I hear somebody, like, driving. Hello.
She goes, oh, hello, Al. This is Cheryl, your occupational therapist from the...
I go, I know who this is. I know. So she's been pretty good. And she's coming over, I think, maybe one more time this week. And then I'm done with her. Done. So that's that. Then I ran into a guy that comes in and works with one of the neighbors here. I was doing my little walking in the courtyard. And this guy's a proponent of medical cannabis. And apparently he's been smoking weed in front of our building. And there's been some complaints because he's just sitting there smoking it. And there's these high school kids come by and, you know, and it's just like, so I ran into him and he started asking me if I ever thought about medical cannabis. And I said, you know, not only have I thought about it, I have used it extensively, for many years before, but I have stopped using it because baby, for me, it's a gateway drug. So, you know, and I said to him, yeah, I know you do that. I know there's been people complaining. I said, dude, you got to be a little bit more cool when you're doing it, when you're, you know, smoking the stuff out in the street. And he goes, well, I am cool. And I said, well, really, you're cool? You're sitting in front of the building? Just, you know, and people are actually complaining? No. When you're cool, people aren't complaining because they don't know you're doing it. Apparently he has no car, so he can't give me his car. You know, my suggestion, I will give this a tip to anybody who wants to do medical cannabis, is just go down the street to some kind of area where there is either an empty, like a store, a business out of business, an out of business business, a doorway, or a place where there aren't too many people, neighbors, the kind of thing. And just, you know, do a couple of quick tokes and move on. Listen, all these years, I've been sober all these years, and I still know. I would still know how to do this, and I would not get caught. All the years I did it for 15 years. Not only was I never busted, I never was busted. I never got any problems. And believe me, there were plenty of times I wasn't cool. All right, enough of that. Then I get Janet, who's been very lovely and nice to me, made some lasagna the other night. She asked me if I wanted some, and then I said, okay. And then when she gave it to me, she goes, I'm not a very good cook. And I was thinking to myself, gee, this is, I really can't wait to try. This is really stunning endorsement. Oh, here, you know. So she gave me the lasagna, and I ate it. I ate like half of it because she gave me a really big piece, and I have to tell her that she's not lying. She is not lying. She has told the truth. And, she asked me, I told her I had tried it, and she had asked me what I thought, and it was quite challenging. I said that lasagna is not one of my favorite dishes, which is actually true. But she meant well, and she means well. So now I'm getting around. I'm starting to drive. I took my first, I drove my car to the AAA to use their DMV services to get what I believe will be my last temporary handicap placard that I will ever need. And you have to get a doctor to fill out a section, and I got my regular doctor to do this. And they're sticklers, these DMV people, because if there's one little error, they won't push it through. So I get to the AAA, and it turns out my doctor, instead of putting his medical license number, he put his telephone number. Okay, great. So, and I tried to sweet talk this girl who worked there, tried everything. They wouldn't do it. So then, I thought, well, there's a chiropractor that I use not too far from there, I've used before, and they've actually signed it for me before. So I called up and I get a hold of this guy. He says, yeah, come on over, I can do it. And so I go over, and because I had asked them, can't we just call the medical doctor and have him give us the number? And they go, no, it's got to be on the form. So the guy gave me, at the AAA, he gave me some forms, some blank forms. And I took it over, and this chiropractor guy filled it out, and I brought it right back. And when I got there, he made a mistake. He crossed out, he checked off permanent placard and temporary placard. And you have to understand, the reason that they're such sticklers about this is because of fraud. And I said to the person there, I go, listen, if I was trying to commit fraud, I just want the temporary one. If I was trying to commit fraud, wouldn't I go for the permanent one? Besides, the people that commit fraud, they're going to pay a doctor. The doctor is going to do it meticulous, and they're going to push it through. And they say, well, I'm sorry, I was throwing some F-bombs. I wasn't, not at them, but just, frustrated, woo! And I was, I got this booming voice, and people are looking at me. I hadn't shaved in, 3 weeks. I had a beard at the time. Must have looked like a crazy man. And then finally they go, well, let's go. They went to get some supervisor guy. And, of course, he's the guy that can't do anything. He comes by and he says, oh, I'm sorry, there's nothing I can do. And blah, blah, blah. So I called the chiropractor up, go, dude, you signed it wrong, blah, blah, blah. And then he said, okay, you can bring it back. And so I'll meet you in the parking lot. We did it, and we both went over with a fine-tooth comb and went back, and this time they let me do it. Let it go through. Oh, it was very, very, very challenging. But the good news is I can get in and out of the car. I have no pain. Before, I was having a lot of pain getting in and out of the car. Now I have no pain. No pain at all. And then, you know, I was going to do a couple more things, but I think I'll just do one more thing here. I went to, for my first shopping trip, I went to Whole Foods the next day. You know, I went shopping there, and it was just so great to be at the market. And so I get to the checkout stand, and then there's this little kid who's in front of me, and she's sort of in my way. And I guess her mother is paying the bill, and the kid's a little bit in my way. And she's a little kid. She's probably about, I don't know, I'd say 4 or 5. So I say to her, "Excuse me, sweetie." And then she walks away, and as I say that, because over at this particular Whole Foods, the aisles, the checkout aisles are very, very narrow. I say, "Excuse me, sweetie," and this guy turns around and looks at me like I'm talking to him. And I just look away. And I was like, yeah, I don't know, you know, because at that point, the kid was small anyway, and she moved out of the way. So I say, "Excuse me." It was like a sitcom moment. All right, that's it. I think I've caught you up to speed in my my adventures. I think I'm starting to go out more now. I'm gonna hopefully in the next couple months I'll be out doing stand up again and actually being out there more in the world. It's been incredible. It's been a very, very incredible journey, and I am grateful that I've been able to get it done. I have to credit, I don't want to get into a political thing, but, this company I'm with was a pilot Obamacare kind of company, and I know there's all these kind of controversies, but, they had to take me with a pre-existing condition, and then they covered me, my medical, most of my medical stuff, so say what you want on any side of the political issue, but I couldn't get any insurance company to cover me before. So okay, that's it. Yeah, something in my throat today. There's definitely, I think it's kind of an allergy, kind of, hopefully it's not a cold, but I think it feels like an allergy kind of thing. Anyway, thank you all for listening. I'm back. This is a little bit longer podcast than normal, so usually I like to have them a little bit shorter, but it's not that much over. So until next time, this is Al Berman live from a studio apartment in North Hollywood, California.